Move on to item E2, election of the common council president. I'll entertain motions from the floor.
Mayor.
Alderman Wellem.
I'll nominate Alderman Nelson.
Is there a second? Oh, there's no second needed. Any other nominations?
Alderman.
Alderman Barber.
I'd like to nominate Mark D'Andrea.
Any other nominations? Is there a motion to close nominations?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We can't do.
Can't do.
Okay. So we'll do slips of paper and the clerk will tally.
Well, Mayor, can I ask one quick question? Can we have the two candidates maybe just give a little experience, a little background before they do?
What do you want, 3 minutes?
No, I think a couple minutes are fine.
Couple of minutes?
Oh, we don't. Whatever each of us would like to say, and just to let the other aldermen know, background, qualifications.
All right, since you started, Alderman Nelson.
Okay, well, one of the things that I think in the last 3 years I've worked with everybody on this panel, openly, transparently, fairly, and that's how I think we need to continue moving forward. I have no problems with Mark. Mark's been in the last 3 years. I work well with Mark as well. I just would like an opportunity to serve at that capacity, and look forward to having that opportunity. If we're going to talk about what I've been, if I want to bore people, I sit on the same finance committee with Mark, and we have that same glazed over feeling as far as Mr. Keechee's here to probably talk about that, but we share a lot of the same interests, but I would like an opportunity to serve the next term coming up. Thank you.
Mark, Alderman D'Andrea.
Yes, I've had an opportunity to become a council president for the last 3 years. I've handled some rather adversarial meetings in those past 3 years, starting from how we had to handle the Rock development and the controversy that had stemmed from the initial findings of that whole development and how it's moved forward, as well as the background that I bring, the real estate license that I bring, the insurance licenses experience that I bring, as well as the business development background that I bring, being in 30 plus years of commercial banking in southeast Wisconsin. So I bring a wide variety of experience that helps aid. I've built, done a lot of trust, built a lot of trust in the community, as well as served on advisory councils and on boards for Southeastern Wisconsin Alzheimer's Association, as well as I've been a Rotarian for 20 plus years, past president, Paul Harris Fellow. I've committed myself to service to the community and Southeastern Wisconsin, and I think the wide variety of skills that I've built up throughout the last 30 plus years helps me to enable the Common Council as well as the current mayor to continue to press on with the message that we want to do for our community.
Okay, so the clerk's going to, actually, Mr. Morrow's going to pass out some slips. For those two on the phone, the clerk is going to, Alderman Mayor, you have the clerk's cell phone number?
Yes, sir.
Would you both just text her your choice, please? Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. You actually have to vote. Text her, please. Your Honor, did you ever envision a day when you'd be texting for council president?
Many years ago, I know I shouldn't speak, but many years ago, Tom Taylor and Basil Lyon tied for council president, and I could have broken the tie. I just decided not to.
You had two of those, Del Seaver, too, that one. We're too old. Mr. City Attorney.
The Del Seaver nomination, secret ballot vote. I actually was in the hospital with an emergency surgery starting the afternoon of that meeting, I believe it was, the meeting day. The next morning, I woke up in my hospital bed, and a few minutes later, around 8 a.m., I received a phone call from the then city administrator, James C. Payne, and he said there were 84 tie votes. Is it possible for the mayor to break the tie? And I said, yup. And so he said, oh, okay, thanks. And the next meeting, the vote was taken and the first vote ended the subject matter.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman D'Andrea received 4 votes and Alderman Nelson received 2 votes.
Okay, here we go. We did Alderman Nelson received 2 votes. Alderman D'Andrea received 4. So Alderman D'Andrea is our council president.
Congratulations, Mark. Hey,
well done, Alderman Nelson. Thank you. Move on to item G2, project updates for Ballpark Commons. The update is a written update in your packet. Infrastructure is 90% complete. New Perspective Senior Living is about to enter final phase. April 10th is the building inspections, and they're about to go into landscaping, so they're about to do occupancy. Velo Village is on track per their schedule. The office building is 100% leased and occupied. The coffee shop is set to start their build out in mid to late April. So that should be starting soon. So we'll have a coffee shop in town. It's good news. Mosh Performance Center, you can all see, is in the process of being built. Lux Golf, set to start in 60 to 90 days. The hotel has been announced. They have a term sheet with a company called Next Gen for a Holiday Inn Express. And that's what's going on with Ballpark Commons. And if you have questions, you'll have to send them to Kelly, and she'll get them to Mike Zimmerman.
Hey, Mayor?
Yes, sir. Alderman Mayor. I see her nodding up and down. Thank you, Alderman.
Mr. Mayor, did you mention the change with the milk bin schedule?
I did not, but Alderman Barber.
That is not going to be opening in May. They're talking about possibly July now. That came out as an email today.
That I didn't see. Okay, G3 is request to accept a grant to update to next-gen 911 capabilities for the police dispatch. Is there a motion? Thank you, Chief. There's been a motion to accept. Is there a second?
Second.
Well, we have all kinds of seconds. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion. Okay, let's do this by roll call. Sorry. Turn your mic on, Mark. There you go.
Aye.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Motion carries 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. For those watching, this gives us the ability to get accurate location data from cell phones so that you won't need to give your address from a cell phone, among other capabilities. Good job, Chief. Thank you very much. G4, On page 49, motion to allow the Director of Health and Human Services to enter a new 90-day trial contract for the Wisconsin Statewide Health Information Network.
So move option one.
Is there a second?
Second.
Lots of discussion.
Under discussion, Alderman Nelson.
I've got a question. This reverts back to the first thing I was saying earlier. It's probably why it cost me the election. But what I'm looking at here is the first responders. We want to make sure that the, and if I'm sitting back here and I'm looking at this and I'm reading this, maybe there's a part on here, because when I have a health crisis or emergency and our fine paramedic staff is rushing up my driveway on North Cape Road, which is way too long, I want them to know what's going on. No offense, but I don't want after-the-fact stuff. I want real-time stuff. Is somewhere in this that our first responders, firefighters, get this information or not?
So what this is, and perhaps I did not the best job of explaining it in my statement, is think of it, does everyone familiar with Epic? It's a medical record system. That is the best comparison I can make to this. It's not real-time data. What this is a mechanism that hospital systems use so that they can see information about a patient if they choose to use a different hospital system. It's used in a variety of ways. It's a fairly large company like Epic. The way public health has used it, Greenfield and Cudahy both are within their 90-day trial of this software. What they're using it for is to assist them with communicable disease investigations. The way that currently, if we receive a reportable illness that we have to follow up on, our current process in Franklin is that we contact the provider to verify the test results, determine what treatment was made, what teaching was given to the actual patient prior to us contacting that patient, so we know what information they already have and what information we can further provide to help them get through the illness and prevent spreading it to other people. In normal times, pre-COVID-19, doctors' offices are busy, and oftentimes it would take nurses several hours or maybe even a day to get back to us with that information, delaying our response and delaying our ability to mitigate the disease spreading in the community by not knowing all of the information. Having an agreement with this particular company allows us to look at the physician notes for that day rather than having to rely on an individual to call us back to give us that information. It's not a system that is meant for everybody in the city to have. It would be specific to the health department, and not even all of the health department, only those individuals doing the communicable disease investigation, which currently is four staff plus myself. And the data would be confidential and HIPAA protected, just like it would be if a doctor faxed us the results on our fax machine or called us back to give us that information. There is no need or reason for us to be looking at patient records that are unrelated to the disease and the date of service that is in question.
But you could. I know there's not a need, but you could. If you had that rogue employee that decided to do it.
Okay, sure. I mean, yes, never say never. Exactly, you're right. But that's true of records anywhere, yes.
Alderman Barb, I'm waiting for Alderman.
I received a call from a resident today who had been told that his medical records or her medical records would be released to the public, and people would know about him or her and their medical history. So I don't know where that rumor came from. But I am assuming that they're still protected under the same rules that PDMP and HIPAA provide, and that is not going to change at all. I mean, even HIPAA has some exceptions to what you're capable of doing with that. But those protections are in place for everybody. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Any and all health information that we receive is protected information based on the privacy rule 45.164.12, which talks about public health access to records. To Alderman Nelson's point, and some of the other questions that I've received as well, yes, I mean, I can't say that there isn't you know, there couldn't possibly be a rogue employee that might want to look something up. I do not know without talking to the software company if there's a way to curtail that. I do not know. Those are discussions that I can have with them as they're setting the program up. I know that Cudahy and Greenfield have been using the program for about 2 months and have not reported any issues with that.
Alderman Dandrea.
You know, I've got tracking programs for...
Microphone.
I've got tracking programs just for my, my simple business that I operate. I'm sure that there's going to be login access and time dating of anyone that would get in. So, Courtney, you'd have an access code, I'm sure, and another staff member will have a different access code. So, the acquiring that data will be one thing, and you'll be able to track, you know, trace it to that individual. Now, granted, who had it and then where the leak came from are two different things. But if multiple people had it or just one person had it, you should be able to trace where who had it and then do your research from there. So similar to what I have internally with mine, with my employees, I'm sure there is going to be something. Or you could work with IT to come up with something as well.
Yeah, and also the information we would be receiving is not anything that we wouldn't normally be receiving through another channel. Like I said, whether it be by phone, by fax, that would be coming to us. This is a tool that would speed up and expedite our process to be able to track and follow up on diseases faster. The 90-day free trial was offered to us in light of what is going on right now with COVID to sort of speed up our investigations on that front with physician offices being so taxed. So normally I would not have brought this forward. There is a cost to it in general, so I thought the 90-day free trial would be a good way for us to see if this software would be a useful tool and worth the cost for us to look into going further. I understand the concerns and will accept, you know, whatever vote you have. It doesn't change necessarily how we do our investigations. This would just make things a little bit faster for us.
Rest assured that we've hired some very professional trained staff who knows their jobs very well and who are extremely trustworthy individuals. And we trust them with our lives, and we should trust them with our information, and they are very trustworthy individuals, and they know their responsibilities. Alderwoman Hanneman.
Following up on the mayor's comment about being well trained, I'm just wondering how long it will take to get employees trained in this system and how many employees you'll be training and if that's going to incur any other overtime costs over and above what you already have planned.
No overtime costs. We're looking to do this in conjunction with Hales Corners and Greendale, so the training would be done in conjunction with those two health departments as well, just to help the Wishin staff out as part of sort of the olive branch of them allowing us to have this 90-day free trial. It's a one-day training, and then as I said, for staff on our end, I have four staff that do those investigations, and then I would also ask for access for myself just from the department director perspective.
Alderman Dandrea.
Just one follow-up question.
Mark first, then you, Kristen.
Courtney, you talked about cost. We fall in love with this product. Do we have any idea what it will cost in the future?
Right now, it is approximately $3,500 a year. We would offset that cost with our emergency preparedness grant and our communicable disease grants.
Okay, thank you.
Alderman Willem.
On the cost issue, the free 90 days then becomes another $1,500 on top of the $3,500. So you get it free, but if you sign up, then you have to pay for that free time. So it increases the cost a little bit. So I noticed quite a few things in here, and this would have been a great document for Mark Roberta to go over. You know, there's a lot of things in here that this is a safeguard checklist, and that you shall adopt and maintain the reasonable security precautions. Do we have those security precautions already written in place? for the training of all authorized users for the confidentiality requirements in addition to just the use of it? And then do we plan on funding this in the future, I guess is a question that we have not discussed. But there's, I guess I'd like to know if there's a way for people to opt out. What I'm hearing from most people I've talked to is they're fine with their physicians having access to all of their records between hospital and laboratory and other physicians, but they're less interested in having government have access to their private information. The only opt-out form I was able to find is opting out of the entire system. Do we have a method that if people want to opt out, having government have access to private health care?
I can answer that a little bit. I referenced the HIPAA privacy rule earlier. Public health is specifically carved out in that as a healthcare entity. Specifically, it says healthcare providers may disclose without individual authorization protected health information to public health authorities authorized by law to collect or receive such information for the purpose of preventing or controlling disease, injury, or disability, including but not limited to the reporting of disease, injury, vital events such as birth and death, and conduct public health surveillance. So